Accession number 22065, Real 5.
Oh, no, no.
Yes, Dennis Avey, Real 5. So, what sort of state were you in at this stage?
Well, I was in a bit of a shocking state. I didn't have any boots at all. I had the uniform that I'd had, I'd stripped off, that is the top uniform. Oddly enough, I kept my bottoms on, Lord knows why. And that was the state I was in. I was in a ghastly state, and it took me hours and hours to recover. Hours and literally hours. And I used to keep drifting off, you know, into, I suppose, semi-consciousness or whatever. And I got on this, in this cleft of rock, and there's some bushes there. And it gave me the shelter, and that was it. Lord knows how long I was there. And then I thought, well, the next priority is food. I desperately wanted food and drink. And that was it. And I went on for some time. I looked at these little farmhouses, and then finally I went to one in desperation. Now, you can imagine the terrible sight that they looked at. God knows, they must have been frightened out of their lives. I was black of the ace of spades, with fuel oil, and hair, and all my rest of my clothes. Suffice to say, they gave me food and water, and eventually they gave me clothing. Whatever it was.
Yeah, who were they? Who were the people?
They were Greek, very Greek, very, very small farmers. They farmed, they had a terrace, they had a series of terraces. I always remember like that. Well, I stayed with them, and I stayed with them about 2 months. But I couldn't understand the language, obviously. It all had to be sign language. And I realised that I couldn't go out at all. I couldn't do anything because the very fact that people would observe me in a state, absolutely black as the ace of spades, with fuel oil, you see. So I left. And then finally, the Carabinieri picked me up because they had people that obviously reported me to the Carabinieri. This bloke, you know, with this desperate sight. And anyway, I was very, very down. I was very mentally down and physically down as well. I should have been thinking of more positively, but unhappily, at that time in my life, I think I was found wanting. Very, very much. And I didn't get the head working at all. And all I was thinking about was a dry bed, a warm bed and things like that. I didn't think of escapement as such, although I was free. Anyway, suffice to say, the Carabinieri took me into Pylos, and then they took me to a little area, no bigger than this paddock here, and I used to call Dysentery Acre. And all it was a barbed wire, double apron fence all the way around. Not very well built up at all, but it had machine guns every, I think, 10 metres, something like that. And inside, there was no coverage at all, just an open field. And it was cold as the hobs, cold as cold. What can I say? There were Cypriots there. There were a lot of guerrillas that had been captured. Cypriot and Greek, and a handful of British fellows and South Africans, a handful. And it was terrible. There was, everybody had dysentery, and they wouldn't allow initially to dig a hole or anything like that. They wouldn't allow anything. And the food was awful. And finally, we made the point we could dig a hole. And it was quickly filled up in no time at all. I always remember one chap, one South African next door to me. And he was crouching beside the pit, and he slid into it. And he said, "This is the third time today." And he said that in exactly that term, tone and tone. And I barely had the strength to pull him out of it anyway. That was it. And I was in there for about a month, 6 weeks. And no coverage, no blankets, no nothing. And then with this dysentery on top of everything. And I always remember, I've told Audrey this. Then finally, as you know, it's a current country and raisins and what have you. And some raisins were bought up. And I had 15 currants. 15. And I cut them into halves and quarters. And the sweetness of, you couldn't believe it. And that was the great, one of my high moments in Dysentery Acre, of 15 currants. And it was like heaven on earth. It just shows what priorities are all about. Anyway, now finally, I was very suspect from then on, very, very suspect.
Why was that?
Well, because I was in top coat civilian. I had my army trousers and shoes that they'd given me. And
did they know you'd been picked up from this ship? Did they? Were you able to convey the experience?
Well, that's what I told them, but they were more concerned about these poor people that looked after me. I gave them a dog's life, these carabineers, and I regret that very, very much. They burned some of their equipment as well, their housing and what have you. Anyway, I finally got up to Kalamata, and then I was taken by truck up to Patras. And that was the position there. And then finally they took me across to Italy. Bari, Brindisi.
Were you taken in a group or just yourself?
There was just a handful of, I didn't know them at all, handful of Greeks, Cypriots and English fellows. And that was it. And they took us to a place, and that was another open area as well, in Italy. It was a terrifying place. And there was more of our chaps there at that time. There must have been about 100 at that time in this outlying place, beyond Bari, I think it was, into the country. And then finally they took us to a new place, the Campo Concentramento 65, which is the concentration camp number 65. And all right, it was a brick building, but that was all. Nothing.
Was that near Bari? Was that?
That was near Altamira and Gravina. Gravina. It was the start of this new place they'd built, but it. I don't think it wasn't meant as a barracks at all, or camp or anything like that. I think they just bunged us in there, and that was it. They put some bunk beds, and that was it. And a blanket that was made of wood wool. And if you slept, or if you slept at all, with your elbow like that, at all, it would go through the blanket. It was made of wood, we found, and that was it. And I'll tell you exactly how much food there was. It was a 200 gram little loaf. 200 grams, that's all. I used to get coffee ersatz in the morning with this loaf, and for want of a better word, soup in the evening. And that was it. And the whole of your physical for them went down and down and down and down. So much so that I used to practice it. I used to go outside in the sun and sit on this side of this barracks and deliberately try to get up quickly. And then I used to blank out. I used to do this regularly because we were so blooming weak. And that was it. And it was terrifying there. Mm-hmm. Terrifying place.
Did you have no Red Cross parcels there at all?
None at all, except the last month I was there. Now, I must have been very suspect, again, with a question mark again me, because I had to go up for interrogation there, and they asked me what I did in civil life and what have you, and this, that and t'other, and my army situation, you know, what I was doing, or where I was, God knows what, and all I would give them was my army number and name, that's all. Anyway, that went aside, and I did say I was an engineer as well.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any rough treatment with the interrogation?
Not at all by the Italians. Not at all. Not at all. The rough treatment was the lack of food, with a terrifying lack of food. And then again, on reflection, I don't blame them all that much because they had very little themselves, as I realise. Anyhow, after that, I was taken out of that camp with about 100 other fellows, put on a cattle truck, and we went from, ostensibly, as far as I can remember, Gravina, and went right up on the east coast of Italy, right the way through to Brennero, through the Brenner Pass, and then into Innsbruck. I remember Innsbruck. And then, from thence, I know not. We were taken to a camp. First of all, we were taken to a wooded area. On vehicles to a wooded area and put in this wooded area. It was very sparsely wooded, only a small, like a copse. And I thought, this is where we're going to get shot, you know. And together with three other chaps, I'd arranged exactly what we were going to do in the event.
What were you going to do?
Well, we were going to, the position of cover, and the position of what we were going to do with anybody anywhere near us, you know. We were going to take arms and then try and overcome. Although there were quite a big guard element there.
Were these guards, were they German?
Oh, yes. They were German. We were in Germany then.
Yes. I wondered when you changed over.
Well, we changed over from Innsbruck. When we got to Innsbruck, in these cattle trucks, we had the German guards then. And then they took this camp, this... and I thought... Any time we're going to get shot, we made arrangements, we'll get this particular cover, you know, should they open up with machine guns, and that was it. But nothing came about. And I know not to this day why they did this. And then we all got back into the trucks after about 5 hours, no food, and taken to a camp. Again, I don't know it. They were full of Russian prisoners. And it was a desperate camp. Now, by that time, lice were obtaining. And bed bugs were obtaining. Because the body was right down to its last resort. And, of course, with lice, as you know, this is what happens. And bed bugs. And even if you slept at night, you got this foul smell of rats running over you. And God knows where they were getting this smell from, I do not know. But we were in there about two months. And I think it was in this camp I was in, and walking across an open area. And with the mental situation at a low ebb, and the physical certainly, and then suddenly this little wretched Hauptmann, this German officer, he was screaming at me. And although I understood German, the amount of screams that he was emitting, I didn't understand what he was talking about. And what he said, what I understood it to mean, I should have saluted him. He's only a little fella. And of course, in any case, when I understood him, I didn't salute him, because we don't salute without a headgear on. And I didn't. Now, I always remember this Feldwebel coming over, and finding what he was, a Feldwebel, roughly a sergeant, something, a sergeant rank, coming over. And he wanted to know what the fuss was about, and then, of course, our chaps got around, and well, it's like a fight in the school ground. You know, they're all around shouting, and they were giving this officer some stick. And this Feldwebel grabbed, and then two more guards came up, and there were, you know, all our chaps were shouting and carrying on, and there was a big squabble, and this Feldwebel grabbed this rifle from one of the guards and took a swing at me with the butt end, I ducked. I had the good reflexes to duck, and he hit this guard straight in the nose. It must have broken his jaws completely to pieces. All his teeth, and he was a bloody mess. And that started a furor. All the guards came in, and I got knocked about pretty badly. And then, to cut a long story short, they whipped me off. They realised I had interrogation. And then again, I was sent to Grodens, a Straflager, a Dronet, Grodens. That was a punishment camp.
How do you spell that, Grodens?
Graudenz, I think.
Grodens.
Grodens.
That's a punishment camp, is it?
Punishment. There was a cello there that I found out laterally, but I didn't know anything about. And I was in there for a month. And believe me, that was a Straflager. Got a lot of punishment.
What did they do to you?
Well, you got knocked about and rough. No blankets, no nothing, just bedboards. That was all. And exercises, and then they'd stand you in a little, like oublier, if you like, a little bunker, about 3 foot square, and that's we stood in that for about 4 hours, something like that. You had to stand up, you couldn't sit down. And then I was taken out of there and sent to, again, interrogation, and sent to Auschwitz.
These interrogations they gave you, the Germans, what were they like, compared with the Italians?
Well, the Italians was just verbal. The interrogation by the Germans was punctuated by punishment.
Which was, what did they do?
Well, hit with a fist, a kick, hit with a pistol, anything like that.
Camp at Graudenz.
Graudenz, yeah.
Graudenz. Were you given, what sort of food would you have been given there?
Just black bread and soup. Well, soup for want of a better word. That was cabbage soup, that sort of thing. No sustenance in it at all. And black bread. That was all.
It seems your sort of a POW experience up until this time, it didn't conform really to the Geneva Convention, did it?
The Geneva Convention was a laugh. I've had reports now that were made by German officers at the end of the war purporting to the fact that the Geneva Convention visited here, there and everywhere. They had regular visits here, there and everywhere. That wasn't so. In point of fact, it was only obtaining at the main Stalag lagers. That, I must admit. But other than that, there was no intervention at all. They said clerics were sent over and people from Geneva, from the Geneva Convention, they came over to ascertain the situation. It was not so. I never saw one person in my life.
No Red Cross.
No Red Cross representative at all. God forbid the parcels that we got were God's gift from heaven.
And did you get many then?
Only a few, because there were, a lot were thieved. A lot of, as you know, there's a lot of food shortages in both in Germany, in Germany and Italy, and of course. They only had to get a whisper of what was in the vehicle, in the trains and wagons, and they immediately, there's no doubt there was a lot sent. but what we got, they virtually saved our lives. Without any doubt at all.
Yes, so what was your state at this time, having been to this punishment camp and having these interrogations? And the treatment, as you say, having to stand and...
Well, I think it was my type of character. I reacted... I reacted against it in a very, very angry, aggressive way. Now, that works two ways. Are you... You're not recording, are you? Oh, beg your pardon. That works two ways, in that it gives you the strength to do these things, but unfortunately it gets you a lot of physical aggression on the other side, because you're angry and therefore you take your anger to the aggressor, and that gives you a lot of problems. But this is me. I'm red-headed, freckles, and with a temper to match. Well, not with a temper. Well, a temper, yes. But by Jove, the stuff used to flow. Without any doubt, that's the sort of thing that used to carry me through. Makes you, as you know, it makes a man the strength of 10 men once he's got the adrenaline going. And this is used to what happened to me. I used to get me very good share of it, you know. But unfortunately, he used to cut my nose off to spite my face, so to speak, you know. But that was it. And when I left Crodennes, I was sent to a coal mine. Now, I was only there a short while, and it was around the Sosnowitz-Katowice area in Poland. And they were mostly Russian prisoners. Mostly Russian prisoners of war.
Yes, I was going to
And they got desperate treatment.
Were they treated worse than other prisoners, do you think, the Russians?
Well, they were, in effect. It's like if nobody attends you, that's the sort of treatment. They didn't get anything supplied, and they were disdainful. And they had reason, I suppose, to be disdainful. Because, very subsequently, I used to talk to the Germans, and I remember one Waffen-SS I used to speak to. He had a couldn't make him out one way or t'other. He's one of the very few that I couldn't really understand. He told me subsequently, he was on the Eastern Front, and he said, "You would never believe," he said, these people being the Russians, they used to come forward in hordes, led by people with whistles, and whistling all the time. And we were set in bunkers with machine guns and God knows what, and we shot until our barrels virtually bent, until we run out of this, that, and t'other. He said, and they still came on. And these were the people. And he said they were like a scythe going through wheat. He said, and that's just how it was. And I should imagine this is how they got the attitude to the Russians that they had. Because they never took any prisoners, as you know. And I suppose you can understand that after this terrifying situation on the Eastern Front. Mm-hmm. The terrible damage they did to the civilian people as well as everybody else.
How did you get on with the Russians?
Very well, very well. They used to try and do these dances for us, you know, but they couldn't, they fell over, they were so blooming weak. Very well indeed, up to a point. But I got to, I got to this coal mine. Was taken up the coal face, and this is what we had to do, shovel coal. Anyway, I was only in there about a week, that was all. And they had conveyors in certain alleys of the coal mine. And these poor Russians had no boots, no feet at all. And one of them got on this conveyor, this rubber conveyor. It was idle. They didn't use it all that much. And he cut himself out some, marked the feet out and cut him out of this conveyor belt. And of course he tied it round with rags or whatever, and he had a sole to his foot. The Germans got hold of it, and that was it. There was hell let loose. Everyone was pulled out of our particular alley, put against the wall, these two Russians involved. Well, there were five altogether, and two of us on the end. They shot two there and then, against the wall face. And I thought they were going through the lot of us. But suddenly, everything stopped. They didn't even cart these chaps away. We were taken away, and then I was sent then to, that's when I went to Auschwitz, then, from there. And we got to this camp, and by that time, there were a number of our fellows there, about 100, 200 fellows, E711.